Welcome to Metacast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
We are on Metacast 3.5. Go to the website if you want to know why 3.5. We had a bit of a blip last week. Bob was a late scratch, much like hockey, so we had to call into the bullpen and we got somebody and we had a technology issue. So we're back up and running on our normal bi-weekly path.
Imagine that, a technology issue.
Yeah.
Well, but we're recovering, Josh. So
yeah. Would it be corny if I said we're agile?
I think we... No, it's not corny at all. We are agile. We're flexible.
Okay.
Right? We will shuck and then we will jive. So we apologize for the delay in the Metacast and the little blip. But I think we have a pretty juicy topic this week.
We do.
It is about... I'm going to start it. Can I start it?
Fire away, my friend.
Shoo!
Ha!
Re! And everyone is listening, or the one person listening is like, what the heck is that about? We're gonna explore a model, I guess, and it's an agile view, but it's a learning model that talks about different approaches based on what your learning level is. So Shuhari, I think it comes from Aikido or Aikido, where...
I don't know. I looked it up once when you explained it to me.
Aikido. I think I'm butchering it. That sounds like a dog, but it's Aikido something or other. And it's a martial art, and they talk about being in the shoe. So if you are in the shoe state, I'm thinking of a joke. If you're in the shoe state, you have a, you are a beginner. And then Josh, so what would the ha state be?
You're in the middle, like a middle reliever. You're sort of learning. You're not a master. You're a journeyman.
You're a journeyman. Oh, I like that. Yeah. Oh, I like it. And you answered the re as well. So you're not a master. So you're sort of a journeyman. You're practiced. You have chops. You have skills. And
like
then,
mutton chop, like sideburns?
Or? Well, now I have seen Elvis chops more today. It brings back memories of my Afro days. We'll leave that.
You've got to get that on the website.
I have no picture. I've destroyed all pictures of those days. And then the restate is that mastery, right? And thinking about it. Applicable to?
Everything. I was thinking about it today and just thinking about in preparation for our talk today was just, you know, you do it and you don't even think you're doing it, but this is really putting a label on it that, you know, I went bowling with my kids the other day and I had to help them along. And I started out doing it for them, you know, helping them roll that ball, and then they wanted to do it on their own. They started to step back and, you know, they're you know, in the somewhere in the shoe to the ha working on that, but they're getting there, and realize that, you know, you do this every day, but we're kind of here to talk about it on the agile software side, but it's the same thing you do when you're coaching your children's team or you're trying to help a friend learn something that you know. It's just, you know, part of the normal process. This is putting a label on it and starting to analyze how to do that effectively.
Do they still at bowling alleys put up those little bars? What are they called?
The bumpers?
The bumpers. Do your kids use bumpers?
Yeah, well, not only that, but they had this really cool thing for my son, who's only three. They had basically a little ramp. He could carry the ball, set it up there.
I've seen those.
He could aim the ramp. He got really good at aiming the ramp. He just push it off, and away you go.
So that's actually, this bowling analogy, I like it, because it's, no, but I mean, part of the shoe state is providing, like, in Agile, there's this notion of guardrails someone introduced me to, which are guidelines and things to keep you on track. And they're actually harder in the beginning because you're in shoe and you're not good at it, right? You're
harder meaning that they're more strict, or what do you mean by...
Well, I mean, well, look at the bumpers. The bumpers are there to prevent you from what? From going into... So it's a strict constraint to prevent your ball from going into the gutter.
Right.
Right, to help you to guide it. And eventually they go away. It's like, what, training wheels on bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of guardrails in the shoe state that they're going to be firmer. It's going to be more restrictive. So the training wheels? I mean, you probably can't run a bicycle race or something? I mean, it probably wouldn't be prudent. I don't think the rubber on those things is very sturdy.
Right.
So they're not intended for like a marathon, you know, 100-mile bike race or something. So they're there for a purpose. They're there for a short period of time. But they're firm, and they may hold you back, right? You may not be able to turn right or left as quickly as you could, but they keep you, what, in the safe,
right?
In this safe zone. So I think guardrails, we've talked about guardrails from an agile point of view. So shoe guardrails, and then they go away. So you lessen the guardrails when you go to Han or you go to Re, because what people know,
right?
People know what they're doing.
Well, let's talk about some of the guardrails that are reasonable to put in place and to hold people to, from an agile point of view, as people are beginning to transition to agile. Some of the things that I know that you were very firm about when you and I first started working together was stick to the basics. You know, there's a reason that these practices are in place. They're proven. It's not something that's, people will paint it as new, but in reality, it's not that new. There's experience that people have in using the stickies. You were very strong on, let's put stickies on walls and move them. Let's not jump into tools, because that deflects you from the real message that the stickies provide, and that's having a conversation and being the spotlight on what's wrong. You can shy away from things when they're in a screen that you don't necessarily have to walk past every week, every day, even every hour.
So one guardrail for me in SHU for agile teams, and some of it is maybe pet peeves. So I could be argued. I'm like a sticky-aholic when it comes to young teams, because to your point, it forces the teams, or reinforces, like, just simple behaviors, mm-hmm, of talking about the card, moving the card, writing on cards. Who can do it? Everyone can do it. Everyone should do it. They move the cards themselves. It's sort of low fidelity, mm-hmm, very low fidelity. I've just gotten such great traction. So the tool doesn't get in the way of your understanding of the method, right? Sometimes that's why I push back on tools, because it's more of an advance. I think tools work really well when you're advanced, but in the beginning, they sort of get in your way,
right?
And it prevents you from learning. And I've seen that over and over again. And I'm not unique there. I mean, a lot of my coaching, it doesn't just come from Bob in my experience, but I read a lot. I mean, I read a lot of blogs. I read a lot of, you know, discussion groups, and it's, I try to assimilate that. I try not to recreate things. And, you know, a lot of coaches say, you know, use sticky notes.
Right.
Ron Jeffries is one of these XP pundits, and he's, you know, he pushes on even large companies, you know, hundreds of, he's like, just stop the whining and stop the tooling. Just use the notes to start with. And
right.
And then the other issue is use the notes, and, or not the issue, but use the notes and then naturally get out of it based on a need, not based on conjecture. Do you know what? So move to a tool when the team decides that they need a tool, not when some manager says you need a tool,
right,
or something like that.
Well, and we just moved to a tool where I'm at currently, and we're finally getting out of practice. People could hide from the burn down and from the task board because it was a web page they had to choose to go to.
Yeah.
So people weren't necessarily as always up on the status of where we're at and how we're going, because it wasn't smacking them in the face as soon as they got up to go get a drink of water or something like that.
And that's another one of those information radiators, right? And keeping them in your face and up and big and hairy. I mean, we're at a new location today. We're in my office at iContact, where we're doing, so we have a new locale for the Metacast.
No longer in beautiful Fuquay Varina?
Well, we will be, right? I think we're going, I mean, we're,
I
not,
hope so.
We're not shying
beautiful
away from beautiful downtown Fuquay Varina.
That's good.
But here there's a lot of information radiators, and I mean, gosh, as a coach, and I would think that we've moved here from SHU maybe to, not maybe, probably to HA. And I'm still harping on visibility and transparency and defects. I mean, just this week I was talking about defect density and escapes, for sprint escapes from a defect, and what is our trending from a defect point of view, and how relevant that is. Not so much an account, but in a, you know, each team should know its trending. Each team member.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the scrum master or the product owner, but I want the teams to understand exactly, sort of to your point, in your face, right? In your face state, because you made a commitment to the business to get something done. And it's like, where are you, right? It's where,
right,
and knowing where you are. So I think information radiators are good. That's a good one of those guardrails early on.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you think you're somewhere in the transition to HA. I don't imagine there's a all magical step where you know it's time to go to HA. It's kind of a leap of faith, I would think that, okay, I think we're ready, you know, and then you give it a shot, or is there something that you've seen where, okay, as a team, we're ready to rock and roll at the next level?
So I actually have a counter view, imagine that, to that, that I would disagree with you.
I was asking, how can you have a counter view to a question?
I know.
That's weird.
I don't know if teams, so I don't know if a team as a whole, so is it all shoe? And then so on one magical sunny day, it goes in Fuquay Arena, it goes to all ha. And then
we're in re in Fuquay.
Yeah.
It's all re.
It's all re. All, it's like all in, right? It's all re. I actually think, you know, what I've seen mostly is practices vary. So we have some shoe practices, and then we have some re practices. And we have very few, but I think we have some re practices. And then we have some ha practices. And I think we're on that continuum. And then I think, you know, if you averaged our practices, we're probably here right in the middle of the ha state. Right? But not everything is a ha thing. So there's things that I think we do. What do we do an excellent job of? Our sprint reviews have been getting really, really good. So they're almost like re-sprint reviews. We're showing working software. It's not even what we're showing. The audience participation is just huge. Everyone we need to be there is there.
Wow.
They're engaged. We're getting Q&A. Sometimes we're getting too much feedback from the audience,
right,
on behaviors and stuff. So to me, that would be almost sort of a re-ish practice of this. The sprint reviews are going outstanding, and we're getting that wonderful customer feedback. And there's some cases where, you know, unit tests, for example, quality. I would actually guess that in some quality practices we're still in the shoe state,
mm-hmm,
and we're getting better, a lot better. So we're approaching, you know, ha, but it's not consistent. So we would, to me, ha implies maybe there's something consistency, right? Do we have consistent? So do all of our stories, let's use user stories as an example. Do they all have excellent acceptance tests that are well done, not perfect but well done?
Right.
To me, that might be a ha practice.
Okay, I can work with that. All right, so steering us down this path, from a ha standpoint, looking at it, it seems like it's a exponential in difficulty to make that next step. Like, it's not going to be as easy to go from shoe to ha as it would be to ha to re, just because, again, it's like when you're doing anything, people are experts for a reason, and it didn't just happen because they put the effort in to get better and get stronger at what they do. So do you think that it's reasonable to expect that you'd be re across the board? I'm assuming not, given what you just talked about.
Yeah, I think it's a false target, because, I mean, you know, is one of the things that makes Agile so attractive in software is because I think of the variability of software, right? It's hard. I mean, it's not just the software. It's the software itself is hard. Like, designing software that's resilient, that meets expectations, that meets requirements is hard. But then getting the good people, the right people, to stay together long enough to write the software. So there's the people side and there's the system side.
Right.
And so how many variables are there in systems? Lots. How many variables are there in those pesky people? Lots.
Oh, yeah.
Put the two together, and there's just variation. So, you know, if we move someone, if we pluck someone from a Scrum team, if we add people, this week we've just hired a few folks here, and we're inserting them into Scrum teams. So has the variability of the team changed? Absolutely. So do you think their shuhari proposition will change?
Right.
Yeah, I think.
So you say they take a step back?
I suspect in some cases, or a step forward, right? Depending on who we hired,
well, yeah,
and how what they bring to the table. And it's about the team. So I think it oscillates quite a lot. But I do think teams, like I said, I think you can sort of resonate towards, you know, for example, a team. What is a team that starts their first sprint and they have their first, you know, first 2 week sprint, they end the sprint, they have their first retrospective. How would you categorize that team?
Not re.
I mean, that's a good way to answer, right? That's so, and probably not ha, no
right,
matter who taught
them. But it's possible.
It might. I don't know. You know what? No, I'm going to disagree again.
Oh,
I mean, so it's like going into a dojo, and after a week, you're going to have a green belt or something.
Well, I mean, I think it's reasonable that if you hired right, and you were able to assemble a close to perfect team. They might be.
But I'm saying they're inexperienced with Agile.
Oh, well.
They're inexperienced with Agile. Okay. They had a class. They had a Josh Anderson class.
Ooh, they're in trouble.
Exactly. Exactly. and they ran one sprint, or they ran two sprints. I think they'd have a hard time to be in a HA.
Right.
They need traction. They need learning.
All right. Well, with that clarification, I'll buy in. I'll buy, but only with that clarification.
I'm going to give them a coach. Even with a good coach, I don't think you move them from SHU initially. They said it's still their first sprint, for gosh sakes.
Right.
And the whole point of the coach is a coach. It's not telling them. So the coach's knowledge doesn't necessarily matter. It's how the team's performing. But I think what the coaching does is what accelerate consistency and accelerate what adoption. So movement, just like in a dojo. I had a small period in the Army where I did karate. I didn't do it well.
Wait, can I see some moves?
Yeah. Many years ago. I think I earned like a blue belt or a green belt. I think
was this during the Afro days? Because you mentioned
this
Afro
was days. The Afro days. This was back in so picture Bruce Lee in those movies and an Afro guy with mutton chops.
Wow,
with a few moves at the time, and I was quite hilarious.
There's got to be some home video of that somewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Please tell me there is. Can I talk to your wife?
I don't think there's no evidence of that time period. But again, that leading, I think the leading can accelerate. I think that good coaching can come in there, and depending on how you coach, and this actually comes into coaching, like at what level, do you coach by like pairing with someone and sitting with them and really showing them the moves so that they get better? I think that's something that you're good at that. I think you've done more of that, of not just telling, and not just classing people, giving instructions. But sitting down with them and actually sitting down and demonstrating.
Yeah, and that's what I was in thinking about driving into work this morning, thinking about what I was going to say tonight, thinking about, and I just said thinking about three times in a row.
But it's okay. Move on.
Is it? I get stuck on those things.
I know.
So, in preparing for today's talk, I started thinking about all the SHU HA-RE moments and thinking back to just being a coach. Played football for a long time and then coached for a while. And thinking about when I was trying to get somebody to learn how to block and learn how to do whatever they need to do, I'd get down there and do it and show them what they need to do.
Exactly.
So I think that's key. And one of the items that people respond to is when they know their coach, their leader, their manager, their mentor, whatever, is competent. Being able to get down there, and maybe not, I certainly wasn't going to run like I used to run and block like I used to block, but I could show them something similar. But they could tell that, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. People are going to listen. People are going to perk up and say, okay, maybe I really need to pay attention because I'm going to get better if I listen to this person. They can actually help me grow because people really do latch on to that most of the time. There's always some people that are just like, hey, I'm comfortable doing what I want to do. I don't want to get better. Just leave me alone. Let me go write code in the corner and don't touch me. But I think in the majority, people want to get better. So I think if you can show them that you know what you're doing, that you're consistent, and that you really care about them getting better, they're going to latch on, and they're going to get better quicker than they would otherwise.
I think you hit a key for me, personal learning for me. I mean, I go through SHU HA-RE states a lot personally, and I'm very self-reflective. You know that I'm constantly sort of evaluating.
I always have a mirror around looking at your afro.
Well, I'm evaluating myself.
Oh, okay.
Is what I mean. And I'm sort of having mini retrospectives with myself. But one of the things I noticed here is, like I talked about quality, and I'm sort of blaming the team for a lack of quality, but it came back to me that I haven't been emphasizing it. I've been emphasizing it at a high level, but I haven't been emphasizing it at the team level. One of our Scrum Masters left for Scrum Master certification. It was last week. And he asked me to fill in for him. And what a difference. No. You cringe. But how cool. So I was forced to go, or encouraged or asked to go into a team. And it was the coolest thing for me because I got a chance to what? I went into almost blind sprint planning. I got a chance to attend a whole week's worth of stand-ups with a team. We happened to be getting at the end of a release sequence, and this team was, they had a lot of challenges on their plates. And so instead of being in a manager type, sometimes you can be too abstracted, to your point,
right.
and sit in a chair. And I mean, I have chops, but there's nothing better than getting down in the trenches with a team and just working with them.
Right.
And it's not even just, it's even good for you. It's because you're adapting your style to the situation. It's situational. And I found that we changed some things as a team based on the situation they had in the sprint. And it was very good for me.
And I think it reinvigorates you. It's just, I'm going to go back to the football analogy just because that's what I spent half my life doing. But, you know, you always had coaches saying, you don't know how lucky you are to get to do this every day. And then as a coach, I felt that same way. But being able to see my players excel and succeed, being able to get back down there and see your people excel and succeed and helping them get there is going to kind of shake you a little bit and wake you back up, say, okay, this is why I'm doing this, and this is what I really enjoy.
I think it's related to Shuhari, like, acceleration. As part of my reflection, I'm like, you know what, I need to get into the trenches more. And my best coaching engagements are where I'm actually a practitioner with the team. But you can't always be there. You can't always sustain that day by day. Your role may change, right? The team may change. There may be more teams. So you can't, you know, in your current day job, you may be the scrum master of one team, a half part-time scrum master of another, and then there are maybe other teams that are just going on.
Right.
So your influence, you can't be everywhere. But just getting down in those trenches, making those consistent calls, guiding the team, I think a lot, moving to Ha, so maybe this comes back to that. So Shu is sort of prescriptive. It's sort of a straitjacket little bit. We talked about that. Ha is, so the straitjacket comes off, and then it starts becoming what? Situational. So it depends becomes a mantra. So now you have to make decisions. Going back to my example, I actually planned a sprint very differently when I was the scrum master. We almost had a fixed date sprint. So this team was coming up. We're doing a Salesforce integration for our product. And this team is doing some performance testing. And we have a date target that we're going to release to our customers, a Salesforce integration of our product. Well, that's a hard date, whether you're in Agile or not. And this team had a set amount of stuff to do. And we almost took a Kanban approach. So instead of doing sprint planning, well, what would we have done if things would have fell off the sprint planning?
Right.
We looked at it as like, we have to get N amount of stuff done. How do we, as a team, how do we do that? So we sort of planned week by week. We sort of planned via a milestone-driven way. And we sort of planned, we sort of took a partly Kanban. Well, that amount of, that sort of breaks rules. Right, I mean, I was breaking 20 rules that I had set for that team right there, in that one sprint, and I think that's that Ha flexibility, right?
I would argue that's more Re.
Yeah,
and I think Ha is you're kind of going along with what you're told, whereas I think once you transition to Re, you start to understand when it's okay and appropriate to break the rules, right?
So maybe the team was Ha in that case. So, and I was in a restate.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, maybe you're right. And it's not right or wrong.
Oh,
but,
I'm right.
But what I was seeing in the team is there was trust.
Right.
That Bob is ascertaining and will go along with it.
Right.
After a few days, there was revelation, this is working out. This approach is working out well, given the constraints that we have.
Right.
I sort of agree with you.
Well, and I see a lot of people just struggling with that of, well, but you said I got to do it this way. And if you said I got to do it that way, you said it for a reason. So why are you changing it now? So that whole it depends thing, when you said that, that kind of made me shudder because I struggle with that a little bit where people are struggling with it depends and trying to find the right tool for the right job. So that to me, that's where Re steps in of once you know the right time to say, okay, let's sidestep and do it this way instead of the normal way because it offers that for scalability or for whatever, then I think you're getting into the re-realm.
Yeah, but I push... So there you got me. You had me at re-realm. So I think it's at the boundary. I think
right.
if you have boxes... So there's a part... There's a periphery of Ha...
It depends.
...to re where you start doing that. I don't think it's just in re.
Right.
It would be like a carpenter, a finished carpenter, a journeyman carpenter... I think so let's say you're a journeyman for 5 years. I think over the course of those 5 years, you have mastery moments. Maybe when you do roofing or shingles or something like that, if you've done it often enough, it's not, you're going to be hot in some places, but you're going to have those mastery moments.
Yeah, but I don't think it's just repetition. I mean, you can repetitively do something bad, so that's one thing I want to separate out that, because you mentioned if you do it enough, you're going to become re, and I don't think that's accurate. Like the whole theory of practice makes perfect, you know, I got harped on that a lot, of perfect practice makes perfect. You know, so I think you have to, you can't just say, well, if I do this 50,000 times, I'm going to get to the mastery level. I don't think that's accurate. Maybe you disagree. You're kind of furrowing the brow in disagreement.
You know, it's to me, what I want, I guess what I'm inferring is I actually want to get to it depends so early. So you're almost deferring it. It feels to me like you're deferring it depends to much later mm-hmm. and mastery, and I get that. But I think the world is composed of context. And so Shuhari, let's use Shuhari as this spectrum of learning, and how do you apply constraints or practice constraints, documentation, checklists, things like that to that, then I think context matters. So if I'm working on DoD software versus software as a service software versus if I'm working in a company of 10,000 versus 3, context really matters. And I actually want people to start thinking of the sooner we can start thinking of, right, one size doesn't fit all, and then that's the right answer. I hope I'm making sense. And I want that. I don't want to wait for Re to get that sort of thinking. Now, I think Re thinks that way, all the time?
Right.
And Ha may think that way 30% of the time, 40% of the time, over time. And Shu doesn't get there at all. Actually, Shu would be the antithesis of that. Shu is like, don't buy. I can barely play, you know, a G chord on a guitar. Don't show me bar chords at all.
Right.
Right. Don't show me anything. But I'm pushing on Ha. I want teams to think of context, particularly what the other part of the dynamics of self-directed teams.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What I mean, do you really? You know, what does a self-directed team look like that's all constrained? And thinking that they can't think outside the box, right? That's particularly in software.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Are you starting to convince me?
Have I gotten you?
You're working on it.
Yeah, it's this context, yet. And I think it's the complexity. I want that. The other thing is learning. Make mistakes, right? Those masters. I'm sure, you know, I got my butt kicked I don't know how many times from red belts and black belts as I was going up through getting my belts. Those butt kickings helped teach me what to do and what not to do.
Right. Right?
So the context, it really helped me.
So I think that's another potential transition point is effective failure. That's a term I've been working on for a presentation I've got proposed out in a couple places where trying to get people to enable effective failure, where it's okay to fail, it's not okay to have a catastrophe, but getting people comfortable with the try it mentality of let's if we're gonna fail, let's fail fast, let's try it for a sprint, and if we fall on our face, we're not that far off. So to me, looking at a scrum team, I think that's a ha type thing, where they're comfortable enough to try something for a sprint and come up with something new to try and go from there and give that a shot. I don't think that's re-ish.
I agree with that. I mean, there's the expression I used. I think his name is John Maxwell. He's written. He's sort of a minister, and he's written all these leadership books. I think
he's short of a minister.
I think he's religious, but I think he makes most of his money writing leadership books.
Right.
At this point, he's written like 20 or 30. You can find them everywhere, and they sort of overlap each other. But he's got very good.
Did he write the 360 degree leader?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So that's,
I thought I knew that name.
But that's just one of the 25. Yeah. I mean, right. He's prolific. But he wrote a book called Failing Forward. That I really like. So I like that as a mantra, which is equivalent to yours, which is, and I like that view of we're failing forward, we're learning from our failure.
Right.
Right. We're accelerating. I mean, even here I embellish it as a coach embellishing. We're failing forward. We're running out. We're sprinting out of our failures. So we're not walking out, but we're sprinting out, and we're accelerating forward, and it's all about the learning.
Yeah, and I'm starting to second guess myself because I think that's almost a environmental thing. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily as much on the team as it is the enablers to ensure that that environment is there, that safety, that trust, that it's okay to fail small and fail fast.
I think it's a leadership driven. I mean, we talked, leadership plays, not I think, it is absolutely, so setting the environment, I think, is a leadership activity. And we can foster it, or we can neutralize it and eliminate it if we want as a leadership team. Now, the team bears this responsibility of walking in there, right? So I can set an environment up. I mean, even here, I'm not getting enough failure. So you know me, I'm pretty, I think of myself as being pretty fail forward friendly, particularly in HA. I want teams to really accelerate. My goal is high performance teams. I don't know how you get there if you don't fail a lot,
right,
in the right way. But I don't think the teams are getting that boldness yet that they want. We have some. I've even heard them use the term. I mean, it almost brings a tear to my eye.
Because isn't that great when you hear that term?
Well, they talk fail forward in their teams, and it's really cool. And it's quite often. And they talk about, and they get it. They get the paradigm of it. Don't get stuck in failure. Get stuck in what do we do about it, and how do we come out of it? You know, it's sort of that phoenix rising, right? It's how do we come out of it as a phoenix rising? But it's still, I'm still not getting the, probably the amount of risk taking. And that's another way of thinking about it, right? It's taking risks.
Well, yeah, but they're small risks. I mean, I think you start throwing the term risk around and people start to get afraid of that term risk because of the connotation that it has of, you have the risk mitigation strategies and all that stuff.
Oh, isn't that stuff crap?
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Right.
There's a topic for another minute. No, I'm serious. Oh, those risk tables and the algorithms that they do. Do you ever see those algorithms? You multiply like the likelihood of the risk against the level of the risk, and you come up with a quantum, and then you put mitigations and partial mitigation and triggers. I know I'm off on a tangent.
But no, that's a, but
that
yeah.
stuff is insane.
Yeah, we just started a new project.
Oh, did I open a wound?
Oh, it's a deep one, and it's driven by a very nice guy, and this poor guy is just trying to—he's just trying to dig people to come up with a risk. And people know it's a joke, and people know that we don't look back at that table ever. It's a one-time thing. It's a process checkpoint that we have to do. That's just frustrating.
I know I sound like I'm picking, and I am picking, but that's actually one of I have a pretty strong traditional project management background. That's one of the most wasteful things I think I've ever... And I've done it. I've blindly done that. Or because the process says you do it and you have to fill in the table. But that's actually one of the most wasteful things that I think I've ever done. Because it never... I don't think I've gone to those risks. So I've been in this business like for, this over 25 years. I don't think I've one time in my entire career gone back to those tables and had it provide guidance that I actually took. Not one time.
So are you going to get your PMI title ripped out of you if somebody hears this?
That might occur.
How much you want to pay me to cut that part
we need,
out?
We need to cut that. We need to cut that part out. No, I mean, I looked at it. Didn't I say that? I looked at it. I created. Actually, I don't think they care about whether it actually was useful. It's just whether you have the artifact or not.
Yeah.
And you check it on the list.
Yeah, that's it.
Apologize to the audience. I took us off track. We better get back to the shoe, the HA, and the RE.
No, we're good.
Actually, let me share this. The Agile Conference. So Josh and I'm volunteering on the testing stage as a producer for the Agile Conference, and I've submitted a few.
Do you have a director's chair that you're going to sit in for that or anything?
I do not. You could feel free to buy one for me. I'll put in my order now.
Okay.
A little bit, the legs need to be a little bit closer to the ground for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to special order. I'm not sure I can get that.
The short man's version of the director's chair. But you submitted some talks. But if you look at the website, it's Agile 2010. It's going to be in Nashville. But we've taken on the website when they talk about the program, they're talking about Shuhari. And what they wanted to do was have a balanced program. And historically, the Agile Conference has been very, and this might actually, you know, see what you think about it, but it's been very shoe and ha based.
Yeah.
Right? Probably 60%, I'm guessing, is shoe. So entry level discussions or presentations, maybe 40% ha on the early end of ha. And what we haven't done is these advanced, not really, very, very little re-ish. And this year, the whole paradigm is to sort of create, what, a third, a third, a third.
Right.
And really create a much more balance, because we're getting more experts. What's happening is people are walking away. And there are 10 sessions, and it's like, I didn't learn anything.
Right.
Because I'm, you know, it was too shoe-based.
Well, that's why I'm going to Agilepalooza on Friday. They are the first one-day session that had a distinctly separate track that they called advanced. And that's why I said to my boss, I need to go to this.
Yeah.
I have not seen one where they say, this is for advanced practitioners, that if you want to learn how to get from good to great, this is where you can start. So I'm really excited. You know, a definition of advanced can be different between
you and
I.
Is that this week?
It's Friday.
So you're out Friday.
I'm out Friday.
That's Bugaboondagalooza? Is that
Agilepalooza, my
friend. Oh, okay. But still, maybe, no, not a boondoggle. I got it. Bust your jobs. It sounds like a boondoggle to me.
So that I think that's great because, you know, looking around for a conference to go to, that's always a hard sell of what am I going to really get out of this, or is it going to be more of stuff I already know? So I think we'll see how things go, and hopefully you guys can hold up your end of the bargain and actually give us a conference that covers all that.
I hope so. You know, one of the things you're seeing, what we're seeing, though, is so part of it is the conference, like, agenda or our vision, our mission statement. But then, you know this, in conferences, you're sort of relegated to, like, what you get, what sort of submissions you
right.
get. And we're getting more advanced submissions this year, but not, and it depends on the activity. So the testing stage, I've been sort of disappointed. I've gotten a reasonable number of advanced, but not nearly what I think we could. Some stages, like the usability, the UX stage, is all novice. So there's actually practices in Agile that I think are, so UX in Agile is sort of in a shoe state. And so all we're getting in the UX stage is very entry-level lessons learned. What would be an example of RE in Agile? Probably development practices like test-driven. We're seeing very mature test-driven development.
Well, but I think we've sort of conditioned people to the conferences that they've been in, and how can I put together a proposal that will suit the people that are going to go?
Yep.
You know, when I was trying to think of a reasonable proposal, I had some I threw out because I thought the audience for this probably won't be there, so I'm just wasting my time and the reviewer's time and everybody involved.
Right.
But hopefully we can turn the tide a little bit and get that turned around to where there's more opportunity to go through an advanced track and actually have it mean something.
Yep.
So it's on you now. You know that. Like,
what?
You've taken this mantra, like, if it doesn't pan out, I'm blaming you.
Yeah, just for my stage, not for the entire conference. For the entire conference.
Your sphere of influence
is broader than that. That's
yeah.
true. So I'll take a little bit of that on my broad shoulders. Thank you very much. I wanted to talk a little bit about RE, which is this. I am the master.
You are
no.
Like Darth Vader.
No, the RE. I am
before. I was but the learner, but now I'm a master.
Stop.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
I am Yoda. You can be Darth. I am. Look at me. Am I closer to Darth Vader or Yoda?
Fair enough.
Yes. Done. We are done here.
Can I point out the reasons of why you're Yoda?
No, please don't. But I am closer to Yoda. But let's talk a little bit about how do you get to mastery? What does master look like? Are you the master of everything? How do you grow RE folks? Does it stick? Do you have any thoughts about that? Are you a RE?
Oh, I'm RE-tastic. No, I am not a RE by any stretch of the imagination. That's the aspiration. You know, that's that magical goal you have in mind. So hopefully my good friend Bob knows how to Remy.
Don't try to re me. I can re I can re you. So no, but I think you have lineage or re inclinations. So how you? I mean, you're a master relative to your domain right now. Your work domain,
right?
In some cases. So what does that
do you
look
want to
like?
Qualify that? Anymore?
No. What is it? But how do you get that? How does it stick?
I think it's the same thing that the teams have to do. I think you have to try and stretch yourself and get outside the bounds of your comfort zone and continue to challenge yourself and find that difficult, nagging part that you know you're not good at and work on it and be honest with yourself. And
man, I'm glad I pushed you because that was a good answer.
I'm good for something.
No, I mean, I think it's the push. One of the things... I mean, me. One of the history patterns I've had is pushing against my weaknesses, and I think that is a re-pattern, right? And it doesn't mean you achieve it,
right?
But it's a journey, and you look the devil in the eye and say, "I am weakest." So that which I am weakest in, I'm going to attack that, and I'm going to try. And not only am I going to attack it to be mediocre, but I'm going to attack it to become quite expert in that.
Right. Well, and this is probably a good topic for discussion, but I don't know that everybody can make it to re. I think you have to have I guess in their certain area, but I think you have to have a specific mindset of, I want to be re. It's like we talked about, just doing something over and over doesn't mean you're going to become re, but I think you got to want it. Because it is going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy to become a master.
So stretch yourself. While you were talking, the thing that struck me is, and I think of martial arts a little bit, but they talk about the master being the best student
as
well.
Is it because it's Shuhari that martial arts pops into your head? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. But it's masters are good what? Students. So you can't be a good leader unless you're a good follower as well. So you can do both. So I think part of the restate is your, let's use terms like continuous learner, challenging yourself, you know, never getting satisfied with your current level. Personally, right, but also realizing where your strengths are. So constantly refining yourself, constantly what adjusting. That's an agile part. I mean, the stuff that I used, the coaching that I used 5 years ago, gosh, I learned so much. It's one of the reasons why I blog or we're doing this, is to continue. It's a moving target, is I guess what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Re to me is a moving target.
Right.
Because the teams expect that of you. Was that true in football? I imagine that's true in football coaching even, because what, plays change?
Well, and the one thing that one of my coaches really harped on us was, every day you have a choice. Every day you're going to get better or you get worse. You can't stay the same, because if you actually stay the same, you have to assume that your competition is getting better. And if you don't assume that they're getting better, then you're just going to get blown out of the water.
I love that guy. So that's a good... Was that at Bowling Rock, or what was the...
That was at the University of Cincinnati.
The University of Cincinnati.
The Bearcats, the two-time Big East champions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying.
I just want to clarify.
You were pretty crisp there on that.
Yeah, because that's...
Your heart.
Yes,
I can see. I can see that the heart. For those listening in, there is a heart beating through one's chest right here in pride for the Cincinnati, was it Wildcats? Or?
Start with me. Yeah, that's an easy Bearcats way to get me fired up.
Then I'll stay away.
No, that's okay. It's good.
I think that's right on, right? It's to stay, you know, to stay the same is to fall behind. It's probably to fall to Haas. So restate is this thing that you need to maybe continuously refine.
Right.
Be a good student. Continuously learn. Understand your strengths. Trust your team. Right. Challenge yourself constantly. Actually get it in your gut. I think of some of those trust your team is a good one. Our first Medicast was around trust. And I think we talked about, you know, it's easy to say trust. It is really incredibly hard to, like, trust a team, particularly, you know, if you think that they don't have the skills or they, you know, there's a risk, but they want to do it and they're attacking something and there's a shadow of doubt in your mind whether they're going to be successful or not. Your butt's on the line.
Right.
There's trust, right? And really letting the team, guiding the team and letting them do. And so, you know, I think all of those variables come into play. Have we beat this sucker to death, do you think?
We have. I have one story that I'm going to save. It's a good one.
Do we have time for the story?
Well, we have time
for the story. Is it windy? I mean, can you abbreviate it or something?
I don't know. It's cool. You brought up
the bear cat. Put him behind you, man. Let him go.
No, come on. No.
They're there. We all love them. Move on.
No. So, all right. So, we'll save that story for another day. That's a good one. Okay. I can use it in other places, but it's a teaser for Metacast 4. We'll leave it as that. We'll get all radio-y and pretend we know what we're doing here.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
So, a couple of trailers to wrap things up here. We are at meta-cast, hyphen being the actual symbol hyphen, meta-cast.com. Come there, check out our blog. We're posting things. It's not just the podcast anymore. We've expanded a little bit. We are also on Twitter at meta-cast, hyphen spelled out, because Twitter doesn't like non-alphanumeric symbols or characters in their name. So,
when you're as popular as Twitter is, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Exactly. So that's how you can reach us. There's email links on the website, Twitter links, all that fun stuff. So
we want feedbacks on topic. Feedbacks. I won't even go there. We want feedback on topics. Software, leadership, traditional software, project management, generally is our sweet spot.
Or questions. Maybe we can get to a point where we have a Q&A section where people email questions.
I love that idea. Yeah.
And we can try and help people through some sticky situations. Almost free agile coaching.
It could be. I think we are Hari-ish. We are pretty darn Hari-ish. So we would love to start sharing that with folks. So questions would be welcome. We want to thank you for listening. Again, now we are in beautiful downtown Durham, but we will be in beautiful downtown Fuquay Arena.
Like you're saying it appropriately.
In our next Metacast.
That's in 2 weeks, guaranteed. No more late scratches and no more technical difficulties. Well, I can't rule out a late scratch, I guess. Anything can happen, but we'll get it done. Josh will make sure that we get the technology. We'll make sure we get the technology right. No coughs, nothing like that. So we'll get that ironed out. So for Metacast 3.5, I am Josh Anderson.
I am Bob Dylan, and shake
and bake.
Yeah.